this week's episode, we're going to talk about some new lightweight trailers that Airstream has available now.
And RVIA has huge numbers on the RV industry's contribution to the U.S. economy.
We will talk about the slithery side of nature and some snake bites, do's and don'ts.
Don't get bit. Kate Dunbar joins us and she'll share all about her new cookbook, The Campground Gourmet. She'll give insight to eating very well on the road. And we'll also interview Jared and Candace Sun of Stable Camper about their travels and their innovative products for truck camper owners.
Absolutely.
Hello, and welcome to RV Small Talk, where we talk about lightweight trailers, truck campers, and the people, places, and adventures that go along with them. We are your hosts from Princess Craft RV. I'm Clint.
I'm PJ.
And I'm Lindsay.
And we thank you for joining us today.
RV news this week. What's going on, PJ?
Well, a couple of things happened this week that have kind of stuck out in my head. And one of them was RVIA came out with their report on how much the RV industry actually contributes to the economy of the country. Yes. And you think, you know, okay, well, we do a lot. Well,
can I get the scope of this? Is this is manufacturers, dealerships, private campgrounds, public campgrounds, parts, accessories, online and all. Is it the whole, anything at all connected with RV industry within the borders of the U.S.?
Absolutely. Okay. That's it. And what would your guess be?
$2.
The RV industry actually contributes $114 billion, billion with a B, dollars, to the economy of the United States. So that's 600,000 jobs, $32 billion in wages. And RVIA estimates that this business has tripled since 2009, when we had a slump in, let's face it, almost every industry,
right,
including the RV industry.
Right.
So I think that I wonder what that's attributed to as far as the culture of the United States.
Okay. I mean, do you have any guesses?
No, none. I don't know. Maybe it's become more of a norm of kind of the fabric of what we do.
I wonder if it has something to do with we've been hearing for decades now about the baby boomers are getting out of the workforce. And with so many of them getting out of the workforce, and there's a real history with that generation of national parks and travel and all that. I wonder if they're jumping into the RVing lifestyle now that they have some time.
Well, I think that certainly has to have something to do with it. Maybe also the younger generation, you know, millennials, like we all talk about, maybe they are coming up. The largest growing segment, I think, right now in the industry is kind of the outdoors, off-road, boondocking.
Adventure.
Yeah, camping has become, and boondocking and off-road stuff has become somewhat trendy for younger people. So, I mean,
I'm wondering if this is tied into the health industry stuff with people trying to be proactive on their health. Everyone knows camping and going out there is healthy. So I wonder if that's part of it, especially with the younger generations. And also, everyone's got the environment on their mind, no matter where they fall on the political scale, the environment's on their mind. And so
I think just adventure in general is more important to younger people. Now,
and being
then
outside.
Maybe it was. Yeah, it's not so much first you go to school and then you do this and then you get a job. Like, young people are kind of putting adventure and travel into a category that's really important to them.
Yeah,
I've noticed the advertising has changed, too. When you're looking at advertising, you're seeing lifestyle advertising.
Right.
And I think probably 15 years ago, which is 2004, you're probably seeing more people with an RV, a trailer, down by the lake with their kids, hot dogs over the fire, and it has expanded past that.
Right. So I've seen, even on, say, ESPN and all that, where you'll see the Go RVing banners on these massive, like, downhill dirt bike downhill racing things, mountain bike downhill racing things. So they are really trying to reach into these adventure sports and those who are following those crowds. Adventure sports and festivals, music festivals and things like that.
That's right. Music festivals is a big one too.
Yeah.
You know, Gauraving has done such a great job. I just have to say they have taken the industry to the next step, and they have worked really hard to be connected with every outdoor event out there of any notoriety.
Did you see their new ad? It has a cricket in it.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, they go across all different types of RVs.
Right.
It's not just travel trailers and motorhomes. They have small things. They have motorized. They have big ones.
Toy haulers.
It's just, they have done such a great job. I really think it makes a difference in kind of mainstreaming the RV business. Anyway, I think it's huge that we have become part of the fabric of the economy of the country to that degree. $114 billion. They do say the industry has tripled in the past 10 years. So I just love that this business has become part of a way of life of just about everybody across all kinds of age groups, boundaries, incomes, everything.
Okay.
I think it's wonderful. I think it will make us a better human species.
All right. Now, you also saw come through your, I guess, your email, wherever you're getting your news, your ticker, if you will, something about Airstream. What's going on?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we deal in lightweight trailers, so we watch that carefully. Okay. And we don't sell Airstream here at Princess Craft RV, but Airstream is part of the fabric of lightweight trailers.
RVing culture in the U.S.
Yes. And we all know the Bambi from, I don't know, years past.
Disney.
Okay. We know that Bambi too.
Flower.
The Bambi has always been the smallest Airstream, right?
Yes.
So correct. Now they have the Nest and they have the Base Camp.
Right.
But they are not your standard Airstream trailer.
No, the Nest certainly does not look Airstreamy.
Well, the Base Camp has got that silver exterior, but it doesn't look like a standard Airstream either.
No, it looks like the helmet from a bad guy in Star Wars.
Okay. Maybe
you're
a good
such
guy.
Such a nerd. Can we go one podcast without you mentioning Star Wars?
So the Airstream, moving on, the Airstream now has taken the name Bambi and Caravelle and created a line of 16-foot to 22-foot trailers. Lightweight, I think the floor plans are the same. They have four different floor plans in each line, and the Bambi is kind of the more basic interior, and then the Caravelle is the upscale interior. So there's a price difference.
So these are options packages, basically, floor plans?
They're not actually option packages, but things like, they have a different stove. They have a different faucet. They have a different soft goods where the ultra leather is in the Caravelle high-end one and different fabrics. So a lot of those type of features have changed. So it feels much more upscale.
Okay.
Now, the Bambi one is nice. No one would ever say it is not
fancy or ultra fancy.
Nice. That's right. That's kind of how it goes.
They start at high end and go up from there.
That's Airstream.
Right.
Yeah.
And the price point on the Bambi series starts at $48,900 on their website. And the other one starts about $60,000. So these are really nice trailers. But that's brand new out. Yeah. It's new in the lightweights. I think it's great. They're going to range anywhere from about 3,000 to 4,000 pounds dry weight across the board, depending on the size that you get.
Okay.
So new on the market. I love to see new products, even if we don't have them here, that really cater to midsize SUVs that can tow them and get out there camping. However that camping works for you. So that was very cool. Came out today and you can see them on their website.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So that was the biggest things I saw in the news. And I think we ought to start talking about snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lindsay, it is camping season. It's warming up, and not only are the campers coming out and the RVers coming out, but so are certain sectors of the animal
world. All the critters.
The critters are, too. They're waking up and they're getting busy. Now, the majority of people won't identify as lovers of the snake category. Am I correct?
Yeah,
on that?
Well, love. Yeah, love's a strong word to give to a snake. Yes.
Right, because they're cold hearted. Cold-blooded?
Cold-blooded snake.
Right. So if you're going out and about in any really cool place to camp, you're probably in some environment where snakes are also there.
If you're a camper, you're going to run into a snake.
Right. Period. And for the most part, no harm, no foul. You're not going to have any problem. They want to be away from you as much as we want to be away from them, unless you just love curling up with a coiled up snake.
Snuggle.
That's right. There's some of them out there. I think, Lindsay, you have a story of a snuggly snake, don't you?
Oh, I did have a snuggly snake. His name was Casey Caw, and he was an albino Burmese python. And yeah, he used to curl up in my dreadlocks, and I used to take him to the grocery store with me. He was real pretty.
Did anyone ever notice?
No.
No, you just don't.
No, because he's all hidden in there, and my hair kind of looks like snakes anyway, so it just kind of looks like a hair tie. But I don't say I love snakes, but I think they're very, very cool. And yeah, you're right. For the most part, they'll just leave you alone. But mm-hmm. we just wanted to clear up a couple of things, give you some cool snake facts, and. Right. Keep you safe in case you see or get bit by a snake.
Because there's so much misinformation out there on snakes in general. The most important part is, if there's a snake bite, what do you do? And there's some weird things.
And what do you not do?
There's more what you don't do than what you do. So we'll talk about that. But let's start out with some of these cool snake facts that we looked up while we're doing some research for this part.
My favorite weird snake fact.
Yes.
Is terrifying.
Okay.
The decapitated head of a snake can still bite hours after they die. Can you imagine being bit by a snake head? That's terrifying. That is terrifying.
And yet you laughed.
All right. Snakes live everywhere on Earth except for a few places: Ireland, Iceland, New Zealand, and the North and South Poles. And I also learned that it is illegal to have a snake in New Zealand. There's zero snakes in New Zealand.
Okay, that's bizarre to me. It seems like New Zealand would be...
Right? No, that's Australia.
Paradise.
That's where all the scary things are, is Australia.
Right, everything
New Zealand, no snakes.
We had so many facts, and I'll cut these little things.
Yeah. Ooh, the Brahminy blind snake is the only snake species made up of solely females. So they don't even need no man. Isn't that cool?
That's
fascinating.
Wild.
Fascinating.
Wild. Okay. We have a link that I'm going to share in the show notes with a whole list of weird, crazy facts on snakes. But what really got us talking about snakes was we live in Central Texas. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to see things like copperheads, water moccasins, and diamondback rattlesnakes.
And wildflowers.
And wildflowers, yes. I've personally had rattlesnakes in my yard and coral snakes, only a few, but I've definitely had more of the friendly kind of snake mm-hmm. around as well. And they still make you jump when you see them.
Well, of course, yeah.
But knowing the differences is huge. How do you tell the difference between the dangerous ones and the ones that are just kind of...
I don't get close enough to tell.
You don't?
But there are two different types of venom, right?
Right. So there's two different types of venom, and I'll get probably deeper into those whenever we talk about some of the first aid.
All right.
And all that. But my two ways if you're willing to get close enough to a snake, my two ways that I've always heard to identify a venomous snake from a non-venomous snake is the shape of the head.
Okay.
So a non-venomous snake will have more of a narrow, slender head. And a venomous snake will have more of a broad
diamond shape.
Yeah.
Head.
Yeah. Okay. Really kind of, you would think, a wide forehead kind of thing.
I never knew that.
And I guess one of the things that you would think of whenever you see that wider head is it will look like the neck, if you will, because a snake is pretty much all neck, right?
neck, 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 neck.
Is that why they call it A snack?
Get a hold of yourself.
Now, that's the only thing I'm ever going to see snakes as now. It's just like a big neck.
Okay. So with the broader shape of the snake's head, it will look like the area just below the head has tapered down a little bit, has decreased in diameter a little bit. So a venomous snake will have a broader shaped head with a tapered neck, in air quotes. And also another thing that I've heard of that you look out for, if you're willing to get close enough, is the shape of the pupil. Whereas if it's a round pupil on a snake,
who is getting that close to a snake?
The snake lovers.
As it's coming at you.
If it's a round pupil, supposedly it is not likely to be venomous. And if it is more of a slit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
no, that makes sense because, like, the, you know, creepy snakes have the slit eyes.
So those are the only things I really know, unless you really get to know their patterns and things like that. I've heard a cottonmouth, if you get close to it, will actually coil up real tight, and that they will actually display a wide open mouth, which is a very white cottony looking mouth, which is why they got the name. That might be a sign for them. Of course, we've all heard rattlesnakes, they rattle, but they actually don't rattle as much as you think. You hear from...
You can't count on the rattle.
You cannot. In fact, not at all. In fact, I heard that there's rumors out there that rattlesnakes are learning not to rattle at all. Those are rumors, apparently, according to some recent research. But all along, they haven't been rattling for more than 50% of the encounters anyways.
So what do you do if you get bit by a snake?
Okay, how about I throw out some ideas? How about this one? Ready?
All right.
Okay, I imagine if I were to get bit by something venomous, I should cut X's over the bite marks and have someone suck out the venom.
That's a terrible idea.
But they do it in all the TV shows and movies.
No, please don't do that. Listen, that rumor, I guess you could call it, actually started because it was put into an army instruction manual way back in the 30s. So it's one of those things that just kind of got passed down, but it is a terrible idea. And here is why.
Okay.
You have a serious risk of infection because, well, someone is putting their mouth on your open wound.
Oh, yeah, I've heard the human mouth is somewhat disgusting.
Second, the venom travels through your blood, through your body really, really quickly.
Okay.
Even if you did do that immediately, you would get a tiny, tiny fraction of the venom. Also, you're kind of wasting time because you should probably be on your way to the hospital.
Right.
So don't do that. It's 2019. Please do not suck venom out of anyone.
Okay, deal. Okay, how about this? What if, and I'm not really sure why I would do this, but what if I electrocuted the area?
Nope. Don't do that either.
Did you ever figure out why that was even a thing? Because
I don't know how that started, and I'm not sure how many people have done that. I mean, but don't do that either. I mean, honestly, there's only a few rules you need to follow when you get bit by a snake, and that is stay calm.
That's the biggest one, isn't it? I mean, just in general is...
Yeah.
Stay calm. Don't freak out.
Don't freak out. Don't go doing anything to raise your blood pressure or your heart rate.
Right. Because that just pumps it right through your system faster.
Yeah. And honestly, if you need a fact to calm you down, I mean, the number of people who die from snake bites in the U.S. is tiny.
Okay.
It's tiny. It's you're 9 times more likely to get struck by lightning than die of a snake bite. So you're fine.
Okay.
Calm down.
All right. I will calm down. Now, this brings me back to the two different types of snake venom that are generally out there. So there's two different types. There's neurotoxins, and those obviously will affect your nervous system. And that's problematic.
You start thinking like a snake?
I don't know. But suddenly it's interesting to me. And the other one is more common across the world, but it's just more common around here as well. Less likely to have so much of the neurotoxins, but more it's just enzymes or proteins in the venom that cause the tissue to break down quickly. Like where the bite mark happened, and the muscles and all that, that immediate tissue starts to decay, break down painfully and quickly, but it's not a neurotoxin. Gross. But this brings me to the next thing, to keep your bitten extremity below your heart or elevated above the heart, because this is a point of contention out there.
We found some conflicting information out on the internet, which never happens, right?
Not in my world.
So I think the best thing that we found, the most official thing that we found, was basically just keep the bite at level with your heart.
Mm-hmm. Unless you really know what kind of snake and what kind of mm-hmm. venom they produce. So your safest bet is don't put it down below your heart or raise it above your heart. Just kind of keep it level and keep your calm. Keep your cool. Another question that comes to mind is with so many injuries, we want to use the rice treatment, which the big part of that is ice. Mm-hmm. Do I ice the snake bite?
Do not ice the snake bite. I guess a lot of people feel like it will slow down the spread of venom, mm-hmm. but it can actually cause a lot of damage. No icing. No tourniquets.
No tourniquets. And I would think a tourniquet might slow down the spread of venom as well. But the danger is tourniquets in general have been proven pretty harmful to people. If not done really properly and left on, you know, just the right amount of time, people have lost limbs.
Yeah, I think your best bet here is, you know, stay calm and go to the hospital. Generally, all they need to know is kind of what area it was in and what color it was. And they can tell you what kind of snake it is, if it's venomous, mm-hmm. And what kind of venom it is, how to fix it, which is usually what right. as a shot of anti-venom.
Right.
So while camping, you're going to run into snakes eventually. I right. just feel like it's like a camping badge of honor, right?
That's right.
You might not get bit, but you will run into snakes. So leave it alone.
Yeah.
If you get bit, stay calm.
Sure. Don't play with snakes. Don't dance with snakes. But also don't freak out when one is in your area. Remain calm and back away slowly if you can.
Yeah, you're hanging out in their turf.
Sure.
So when you're out there camping, keep your eyes out for snakes. Know what to do. Be safe.
Yes, ma'am.
Next time we'll tell you what to do when a bobcat is chasing you.
Will we know?
Run!
Cool.
So let's move on to something a little more pleasant and a little...
less reptilian?
That sounds great.
A little tastier.
Chicken.
No, I was thinking campground gourmet.
Okay, so highfalutin fare.
You bet.
All right.
So today we get to talk to Miss Kate Dunbar. Kate is a very good friend of ours here at Princess Craft. We've known her a long time, and we're just really excited to get to ask you some questions. So, hi, Kate.
Hello, Lindsay. Thank you so much for having me on. Oh,
thank you for coming in. I know you have a really crazy, busy schedule, so it means a lot that you get to come in here. Kate is... cooking genius, a camping genius. She puts it all together and wrote a cookbook for cooking while you're camping. What is it called?
It's called The Campground Gourmet, and you can get it on Amazon for $9.99. I've got over 100 recipes, and every recipe has an image that goes with it that I shot myself. I'm a professional food photographer, too.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah, maybe a little.
Oh, it's just a beautiful cookbook, and it really is. It kind of elevates campground cooking. I mean, nothing wrong with some s'mores and hot dogs.
Absolutely,
but sometimes.
Nothing wrong. Sometimes you want a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I wrote these recipes thinking about the camper that's maybe not at my level. I am a professional chef as well. Mm-hmm. And some of the steps along the way, I made certain to rewrite for the campground mm-hmm. cook, where it is simple, where it is easy, where they are fast, but the ingredients are available to everyone. So I really tailored this to the individual camper, the family camper, and then you can adapt those recipes and bring them into your home as well, which is great. I don't have any of the foil packets. I don't have any of like the sandwich grill once. I don't. I'm a real food cook. Mm-hmm. So I brought my experience into this book and presented it in a very simple format.
What has surprised you the most since your book was released? I mean, that had to have been like a new experience for you, releasing a book.
It really was. It was something that, you know, you put out there. And since it's also an ebook, which is, mm-hmm. it was designed that way for the traveler, for the travel trailer.
You know, so you don't have to carry a book around.
So you don't have to carry a book around. So you don't have to take up valuable space. As we all know, mm-hmm. space is an issue. And, you know, I'm not recommending a ton of new camping equipment that you need to have to create these recipes. You pretty much have it. I've given you some suggestions in the book to add to it. But if you don't have a Kindle, you don't have to worry about it. You get the app on, you know, on the app store and you download it. It can go onto your iPad, iPhone, any digital device. And that's how you can get my book. It just links with your Amazon account. It's really simple and easy. And you can also print out the recipes once that you've downloaded the book. So you have a paper format if mm-hmm. you want it. But one of the biggest surprises has been probably one woman who sent me just the sweetest note ever. And she said, we've been camping for 10 years with our family. And your cookbook was the first book that actually made me feel like I could cook a meal at the campground and it would taste like something that we would have at our home. We usually go out to eat the whole time while we're camping. So we pick the area, we pick the campground or the resort that's really close to town where there's a lot of restaurants and we can just, you know, get a meal and then bring some back to the camper and, mm-hmm. you know, heat it up in the microwave. But to know that I've helped a family save money, because mm-hmm. when you're cooking for yourself, you're absolutely saving money when you're on vacation. But to know that I helped her find that confidence that she could do it was just mind-blowing. I had no idea that there were campers that went camping and that ate out the whole time. Like, that just never crossed
That's
my mind writing
thing.
This book.
Yeah.
And it really, really is, which brought it back to that whole, okay, this is an industry that there are two very distinct camp cooks. There mm-hmm. is a camp cook, which is a reheat, and there is a camp cook, which is a fully prepare and eat. And that's where I'm now seeing a new platform that I really wasn't aware of before.
That's kind of how you found this campground cook, like, niche market. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Okay, so tell me some of the non-negotiable must-haves for your camp kitchen.
That's easy. That's so simple. I think a great set of cast iron, because you can use it in the fire, on the fire, on a burner. It can be used all different ways, and a very good ice chest, because your refrigerator is going to fail in your RV. You're going to have something happen. You're going to be somewhere and a lightning storm is going to strike and the whole park's going to lose power and you have food. And one thing that I'm really bringing to attention when I go teach the outdoor camp cooking classes is food safety. And you really have to be careful, because foodborne illnesses and bacteria, they just don't like kind of get there and get a little bad. They get really bad, really fast. And in an RV, we're really dependent on those refrigerators holding our food and keeping it at a cool temperature. And if you have a really great insulated ice chest, mm-hmm. you're made in the shade. It's like, it will be your backup, or it'll be your main transport for your food at keeping it safe. And also, the one thing that in that whole essential thing, cooling down, well, let me kind of edit that one a little bit. When you use an ice chest, you don't just open it, throw in ice, and put food in. You have to cool that thing down 12 hours before you put food in, because all the insulation has to get cold and it has to bring it down in temperature. So when you're putting your cold food in there, you don't lose any of that cold that's there, and it'll keep it safe within the food temperature range, the safe range for you. So cast iron can also be used as a hammer. If you don't find one and you had to pound in a tent stake into the ground, which I've been very guilty of doing before, you know, it's a multi-purpose tool. So those are the really essential pieces I think every camper needs.
Cast iron set and a good ice chest.
Yep.
All right. So I want to know, what are your biggest no-nos for camp cooking? I know you have, I know you got some.
I could write a book on that. Maybe I should. Maybe that should be.
Give me some of your biggest.
Some of my biggest ones are putting the bar way too high.
Okay.
There are a lot of people who overpack, overbuy, mm-hmm. who just...
Me.
see, it happens. Sometimes it happens with me too, because my husband's like, we do not do 3-course meals at the campground, babe. Like, tone it down.
And that comes with experience, because you want to be prepared. So you overpack and you think, I'm going to create right. this big, amazing thing. And when it becomes overwhelming, it's not fun. So
it's like, for some strange reason, I always think we're going to eat 10 times more food at the campground than we are at our house. And I mean, seriously,
you're
going to
be
I'm
too busy
like,
running around. Yeah.
Exactly. I think so. That's one thing. You pack away too much food. And then that bar being so high, it's like you spend most of your time doing food prep mm-hmm. and campfire or grill prep that you forget to have fun, or you just don't have time
right.
to have fun and experience the whole reason why you went camping, which is usually to unplug, reconnect, and just take a breath or take a nap. Oh
right?
my gosh, camping naps are the best. Oh, they help soothe the soul. And then going back to that ice chest one, not keeping your food at the proper temperature, because you don't want to get food poisoning when you're camping.
Oh my God, no.
I mean, that, and it's a serious thing, and it mm-hmm. happens. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just be careful and be cautious of that. Plan for bad weather and know how you're going to prepare your food if bad weather happens, or if you lose power, or if someone forgot to fill the propane tank, or if it's raining and you can't light a fire. Always have that backup. Those
that
are
Boy
things
Scout
that people
mentality.
That's where my husband really comes in well with that Eagle Scout. It's like, okay,
right.
we're good. We got everything. We can handle this. But that's it. That's the note, is people are either way overprepared or they're very underprepared, and they're scrambling, trying to find a Walmart, trying to find a grocery store, trying to find a restaurant. And it just completely breaks the whole moment.
What's your biggest camping oops moment with cooking? Did you have to, you know, you obviously figured these, you know, no-nos out on your own, but what's your biggest just, oh my goodness,
smack
moment.
My head kind of a
yeah.
moment. I've got a few.
Facepalm.
I've
oh,
got
no.
a few where my husband will even just look at me and he'll raise his eyebrow and go, you didn't just do that, did you? Like, you're a professional. You're not supposed to be doing that. I cracked a cast iron pan in half. A Lodge cast iron 12-inch skillet, cracked that sucker right in half, ruined the meal, set it ablaze.
How did you just...
Okay, so this is where the fancy camper in me comes out. I was roasting potatoes,
okay.
little beautiful new potatoes with fresh herbs and everything. I'm like, ooh, I've got some duck fat in the fridge that I packed to go with me, because duck fat is the best with potatoes. You've never tasted something so perfect, so amazing, full of beautiful, luxurious flavor.
Oh. You guys should see her right now.
Like, my eyes are fluttering. Yeah. I can think about it. My eyes just flutter. Well, duck fat is also very highly flammable.
Oh.
So just know that. And we were there at the campground. My husband had a beautiful fire going. The coals were just white and snowy with that beautiful amber color underneath it. And I had that cast iron pan and I smacked it right into the coals, which you can, which right. is meant for. And then I added in the duck fat. And then I forgot there were still a few little flames. And it set that sucker not only on fire, it was a fire ball. It was all over. And I just kind of sat there looking at it going, I know better.
Oh,
I know better. And then when I went to pick it up, because it got so intensely hot that the skillet literally snapped in half. And I just stood there. I'm like, wow, I have never seen a cast iron pan
I didn't
crack
even know
in half.
That could happen.
And so it was funny. I called Lodge. I was like, hey, I did this, da-da-da. And I mean, you know, they're laughing on the phone. You did not. Like, I totally did it. And they're like, yeah, well, you know, crazy
you
things
do
can
that.
Happen. You shouldn't have done that. I'm like, well, yeah, I know, hindsight. But yeah, so I've had that kind of an oops. I've completely forgotten to thaw what we were going to be cooking for dinner. So it's like, oh, you're all getting cereal and enjoying it.
I do that at home all the time.
You know, there's nothing wrong with
PBJ.
That. There's whole grain in there. It's perfect. You know, forgot milk before, which is really kind of important.
Yeah. And,
you know, those kind of, I actually forgot salt once. Oh. I will never.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's
huge. Whoa.
For, like, I travel with 8 different types of salt. No joke. Y'all see it. It's like, that is part of the kit. And for some strange reason, that kit part got left in the garage. And I was really sore the whole time. I was just
like, go to the Dollar General and buy some table salt and be mad about it.
Table salt. And I don't get my flaky sea salt on my seared steak. This is disgusting. But when you come from my background.
Right.
That's a travesty.
Yeah.
Like it is huge. So for any of you that get to, you know, come and cook with me and I get to demo for you, you'll totally get it. And then when you taste all those different types of salts,
it'll
you'll
be a
understand.
Travesty for you
you'll
too. Yeah.
Totally understand why it was a aw, she really messed up. Oh. Like moment.
Okay, so that interview with Kate is going so well. However, there's so much content, we had to cut it there so that we can continue the interview next episode.
But I love the last part.
Well, I guess you're going to have to listen in for the next episode.
Okay, when we do some quick fire questions with Kate.
I don't think she's ready.
Lightning round with Kate
Lightning.
Dunbar.
So we have a little bit of time left in our podcast. I want to catch up with Candace and Jared Sund of Stable Camper.
Cool.
They'll tell us a little bit about their new, very cool, very innovative product for truck campers.
Right.
And, you know, they also have a story of their own.
Well, let's do that.
All right.
So right now we are at the Texas Truck Camper Rally. And we're sitting here visiting with some folks who have made this cool little product, but we're going to talk about that part later. So you guys introduce yourself.
I'm Candace Sund, owner of, or part owner of Stable Camper.
And I'm Jared Sund. I'm the other owner, founder of Stable Camper as well.
And we're also here with.
I'm Cody, and I work at Princess Craft in the parts department.
In the parts department, but Cody has also been a tech with us and a service manager, very familiar with the industry. So you're kind of cutting yourself a little short there.
I usually do. But
yeah. So we have Cody involved just because we're going to be talking about truck camper gear. So it's always fun to have another perspective. But before we get to the gear part of this, let's talk about how you guys started. What's your truck camper history? Tell me something fun. How did it start?
Well, we've been truck campers for over 20 years now, and we got our first truck camper. We actually traded 3 cases of Coors Light for this old 6-pack truck camper. That
oh, that's great.
At our neighbor's house. And we rebuilt the floor, did a few things to it, and we ended up taking it on a 2-week trip to Yellowstone with our daughter. She was 2.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, at the time. And that was really fun. And we just thought we were the bee's knees because we had this camper and all of our friends were tent camping. And so.
So you're probably newly married, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you traded 3 6 packs?
Yeah. No,
3 cases.
Three cases, yeah.
Oh, well, that makes all the difference.
Of a really fine beer.
Like yeah, it was.
Well, back then, were they actually selling it in Texas?
I guess this was in Oregon.
Yeah, this was in Oregon. This was in Oregon, yeah.
So you traded 3 cases of beer for an old 6-pack. Mm-hmm. You rebuilt it and headed out.
Yeah. And we were hooked.
Yeah.
We went up to Yellowstone, our first big 2-week trip, Yellowstone and Glacier. And
it was neat.
We were just this was high living.
Yeah.
And that's
amazing. I mean,
that set us on a path. And we've owned 5 truck campers since then. Mm-hmm. And we've traveled all over the Rockies, all over the U.S. and lots of Canada.
Nova Scotia.
Yeah. We had in 2015, we sent our daughter off to college, and we bought a new Arctic Fox 992. And in 2 years, we put 300 nights on it, and we did 40 states and 3 Canadian provinces, and we were just traveling and going having fun.
Wow. Do you have other jobs? 300 nights in 2 years? That's crazy.
A lot.
So 20 years ago, you bought a truck camper and you rebuilt it. What were you doing at the time?
Oh, gosh. Were 20 years ago?
Were you working or were you like freloading and living on the beach?
No.
I mean, we were both working.
Yeah.
I think I worked at a bank at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I worked in engineering. And then with our daughter, Candace decided to quit work.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually moved down here to Texas.
Yeah, we moved to Waco, Texas for a few years.
Waco.
Yeah. I took a job with Raytheon in Department of Defense. We worked down there for a couple of years. And then we came back home to Oregon and started truck camping again. We actually didn't have a camper down here.
Yeah.
And I went back to Oregon, bought a camper again, and started traveling again. And Candace took time off, went back to school, became a civil engineer while she raised our daughter, and I worked. Yeah. And then...
Wait. Time out. Yeah. Two engineers?
Well, my background's computer science, so more software.
But he's very mechanical.
Yeah, I've done mechanical engineering as well. And, and Candace went to school and became a civil engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So us starting this business, we've been around product development a lot, and Candace worked as a project engineer, making sure big skyscrapers were built and all that sort of stuff. And
very cool.
And so she quit work, 3 years ago in December? She said, I'm done. Finished a big project in downtown Portland. Like, I'm taking off.
Taking a break.
And I kept working for a while. And, I worked at a big software company, and Candace said, well, I'm going to go back to work. You need to quit.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I'll quit. And our intent was maybe not retire forever, still quite young.
Just take a break, a little break.
We called it retirement because we didn't know if we'd go back or keep working. And we thought we'd travel a lot. And we had this idea for Stable Camper, and we started that business off. And, well, that took over our lives, like most businesses do.
Uh-huh.
And,
it's been almost a year since we launched, and we've just been going strong. But we wound up buying equipment, CNC equipment. We had a small shop, and we started building the product in-house and doing all our design work. Maybe we should start at the genesis of Stable Camper, though. We should talk a little bit about where it came from.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
We've always had a shop, always built stuff and do whatever. And we had a 992, like I said, we bought it new.
Uh-huh.
And it was just rocking around, and the jacks were creaking as we're sitting in it, offloaded from the truck. And we thought, there's got to be a product for this. And we looked around. We didn't see anything we liked. So we set off to just build something for ourselves. And we did a little design work, and then we strapped some 2x4s to the camper.
Some hose clamps.
Yeah, some hose clamps.
It worked.
Start preliminary preliminary.
Just start testing out stuff, see what worked. Yeah. And then we refined the design over a couple of months and made a really nice product for ourselves. They had powder coated, and it looked beautiful.
Yeah.
And sure enough, as soon as people saw it, they wanted it. And so we got convinced to take it into a product, and that was kind of the genesis for how the whole thing. We started going.
You just built one for yourself.
That was the start, just to solve our own problem. We build all kinds of stuff for our camper, so it wasn't uncommon for us to do that. And but as soon as people saw it, they just wanted it.
Yeah, we were camping at, was it Garibaldi?
Yeah, we were crabbing.
Yeah, and one gentleman, Jared, showed him, and he's like, I want one of those.
His was on sawhorses.
Yeah.
And he came over, and I said, you want to see something cool? And he came over and looked at it, and he's like, you got to go make a product of this. And we're like, well, I don't know. And sure enough, we did, and it's been going strong. Mm-hmm. So then we started doing a lot in manufacturing and trying to figure out how to get prices down and keep a quality of a product. Because we built this for ourselves, and we had a camp we were proud of, and we wanted a good quality product, not just sheet metal and something flimsy.
Yeah, something nice, good quality. Because the campers are so expensive, we wanted something that would look nice.
Good on it.
Yep.
And so we decided we'd go out and get quotes for parts and see if people could build them. And the quotes we got back were insane.
Crazy money.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
To get the parts built.
Yeah.
So did you go to people that knew truck campers or just like
manufacturers.
Machine shop type things?
Yeah.
And one of the parts that we had quoted
Was the jack clamps.
Jack clamps.
Yeah.
One side of it.
I mean, it was really expensive.
Yeah, it was like $50 to $150 per part.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we said.
Yeah.
That's pretty high.
And one of them was a friend of mine, and I talked to him. And I said, no, I need like $5 a part.
He's
like, I might go get down to $35. So we were like, we're stuck. We didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So we started doing a lot of research in manufacturing, and we came up with some processes, and we bought some more equipment. And and we didn't want to buy equipment and then just lower our rates, so we were working for free. We didn't want to, you know, a normal shop rate on a piece of equipment might be $80 an hour. And we didn't want to say we're going to make these cheaper by doing it $20 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the math, and we figured out we're going to quote our machine at $150. We'll double our machine rate And those parts now, we run them, not our internal cost, but what if you brought them to us, we make them for $6 a part now.
Wow.
Yeah. So instead of having to go overseas or do something unnatural, we just really put our heads down and thought about how to do it right. And we're not machinists. So we didn't have that kind of, we didn't have that hampering us as like, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
It also hurt us because we're not machines. Yeah, the good and the bad, right? Yeah. So, but we set out to do it, and we figured out to bring our costs way down and get it down to an affordable price and not lose any of the quality in the product that we wanted to have in it.
Yeah.
I still always tout the key is we just didn't want a lesser product. That was our whole thing.
Yeah.
Because if we were going to go forward, we wanted the same quality product that we would buy and we would use on our truck camper. Otherwise, we weren't going
to
do it.
Yeah. Because we could have gone to like the thinner wall steel tubing and all of that. But it just doesn't have the quality feel to it at all.
And we've been asked by some manufacturers, why don't you go to a thinner tube, or why don't you do this? And we're like, it looks like it belongs on a camper. Mm-hmm. It feels good in your hands. Yeah. It's not just the functionality of it. Mm-hmm. It's how much you enjoy the product.
Yeah.
And what we built it for, and I always say this, is we built it just because we wanted a higher feeling of quality out of the camper we enjoyed. Mm-hmm. The benefits we got from that was like, it's not working the joints of the camper jacks as much. It feels, it's safer. It's, all those sorts of things. Really, we wanted to step into our camper we enjoyed, and we just wanted it to feel good.
Yeah.
And that was what we were really after.
You were heading for the experience.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's not many products, especially in the truck camper market, that go after experience.
Yeah.
No. And so
that's true. And so that's true.
Our customers, if you see us on the Facebook groups, or you'll see people touting about our products, we love our truck campers, but it just brings it that much better.
Yeah.
Well, from a service and parts standpoint, having a good quality product, mm-hmm. I mean, is huge, because things are not quality. A lot of things are not quality on the market that go into campers sometimes, and people struggle with them. The end consumer struggles with them, and we just don't have a lot of options for them. So getting other companies on board that can build quality products at an affordable price is excellent.
Yeah. And it's not just your campers. I mean, it's in life. We're all consumers.
Yeah.
And we know it feels like products get cheaper and cheaper, and that's not what we wanted to do. We didn't want to manufacture that sort of stuff. We want, if we were going to do this, we thought we want a really high quality, nice product.
Something
that people
we can
enjoy.
Stand behind
and feel proud of.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and a product people are proud to put on their campers.
Yes.
So what about truck camper adventures? What have you done in your truck camper? We love to hear the biggest, baddest stories, the scariest stories, the funnest stories.
16. We did a full round the country trip in 2016, eight weeks.
Uh-huh.
We went all the way up to Nova Scotia, and we did the Blue Ridge Highway and
the Whiskey Bourbon Trail.
Yeah, we like whiskey.
Yeah. That's good.
Okay. Yeah, that was we really know you fun. A little better
Civil
now.
War, yeah. Like Civil War. But in last year when we started this business, we went to Gettysburg, and we did
that was fun.
We did West Coast to East Coast and back in 19 days.
Yeah.
Whoa. And the only thing we did on the way there, we got there in 3 days.
Uh-huh.
So the only thing we did on the way there was Candace wanted to see the largest combination yard.
Bailey's Yard. Yeah.
It's Bailey's where they put yard. Trains together.
Yeah. In
like the construction of them and everything?
No. They call it humping yard.
Humping yard.
Where the train's going east, the train's going west. They break the cars off and then re-put them together into other trains.
Oh, okay.
So is it Nebraska?
So,
I can't remember where it is.
I think it was in Nebraska.
Yeah. Well, we will look it up and put it in our show notes where the humping yard is.
It just shows what a nerd my wife is. But that's the one so thing. Cool, she had one recreation to do on this trip. She's like, I want to go to the biggest combination yard in the world.
Yeah. Stop there.
Okay. How many people even know what a combination yard is?
I had no idea what it was.
I don't know.
How did you know what a combination yard is?
Oh, I was just looking online at places to stop, and I found it on there.
When we're going down the road, she's on the laptop, doing work, running our business, and I think she drifts off into places to see along the way, and it just happened to be close by. She
really
needed
cool.
a break.
Yeah,
well, don't we all?
It was fun to see it.
Yeah, it was
huge.
That is interesting. Yeah. What were you doing in the east side of the U.S.? If you got there in 3 days, there was an event you were going to?
There was another rally
we
up
went
there.
To a rally.
Oh, okay.
The Gettysburg
good.
Rally we went up to up there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
In September last year.
Yeah.
It was a great rally. Just
it
like
was
this.
So fun.
Fun. Great people.
Yeah. Loved it.
It's neat to pull into a park and see, 50 or 60 truck campers. You just don't see that.
Mm-hmm. It is fun, isn't
it? Yeah.
I didn't get here until last night, and I was driving in, and I had to turn my radio down and just smile and go real slow and look at all the Trek campers. It's so much fun.
It is.
Yeah. It's way different than seeing 40 or 50 on our parking lot. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So much cooler to see all these people camping and awnings out, and everybody's sitting under it. Yeah. And everybody has a glass of something.
Yeah.
And people have gathered under certain awnings. Uh-huh. Oh, it's just so fun.
Yeah.
Well, and this one, some friends of ours from the Northeast told us we got to come to this one. So sure enough, we came down. And, you know, if you haven't been to a truck camper rally, they're great. I mean, the people here are wonderful.
Yeah.
We did the Cirrus one before we came here, which was neat.
That was neat, too.
Because it was all Cirrus campers. Mm-hmm. So it's neat to go to a RV park and see almost like a dealership, but it's people using them. It's not a dealership.
Yes. Yeah.
And we do the NatCo rally, and we'll do Gettysburg again, and we'll be sure to come back to this one too next year. This is great.
Very cool. Well, we hope you do, because we have so much fun.
It is.
We're always gathering all the people we like.
Fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's our goal every year, is to get all the people that we enjoy and make sure they come back so that we get to hang out. It's like a party for us.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. Neat.
So what's on the horizon for you guys?
Oh.
What's your life going to look like a year or two from now? Is it going to be different? New products?
Bigger new truck.
Bigger truck?
Bigger, we're still back to the bigger truck.
Yeah.
Bigger truck, TV.
Yeah, you get maybe a bigger truck, she gets a bigger TV. That sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where you would put a bigger TV.
I can't wait for you to see
hang it on the ceiling.
I can't wait either. Anything coming up that you're excited about?
Yeah, we're launching some new accessories stuff on our website pretty quick, anytime now.
But you're not going to tell us about it?
No, we can. So, I mean, we look at truck campers and we see all these rigid surfaces like the jacks and the jack mounts and the bumpers and the ladders and like look at all kinds of convenience products you could put on these things.
Uh-huh.
So we're looking at how to make products in that space. So We've talked about this one before, but one of the things that we built was like a fishing pole mount. We fly fish, so we come up, we lean the poles against the camper, and it's kind of scratching the sides. And we're like,
right,
oh, why don't we just build a mount that hooks on the jacks, and you set your poles in there, and then go ahead.
Oh, and we've got some mounts that attach to the ladder, the whole like your shovel and your broom and all that stuff. Yeah.
So you could have them there attached to it when you travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of this stuff that exists in the four-wheel drive market and the overlanding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're just looking at some of their products and like, well, truck camper people need this stuff too.
Storage absolutely.
It's a big area.
Yeah, because I mean, trying to pack stuff into a truck camper is not always easy.
No. Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, a lot of the products we get or that we build are just from us truck camping. And we're like, you know, it'd be nice. And then we get tons of ideas too.
Yeah.
So, and we love it. We love all the ideas, no matter how crazy or wild they are.
Yeah.
We love them.
So how many new products are coming out in the near future? Are we talking one or two, five, 10?
Try and launch 10 products.
Yeah.
10 products?
10 products in 2019?
Probably in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Some of them are our own and some are, you know, we as Trek Camper people, we have trouble finding them. So like bumpers. So we just,
we just
put bumpers on there. Mm-hmm. And some of them are products for our stabilization systems to, you know, add on products for those. And some are all brand new products too.
Like the mounts and all this.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So if somebody wants to see your new products or see your stable camper, they just go to stablecamper.com. This is your commercial, okay? Right. Yeah. Here is your opportunity.
Time to do your plug.
Okay. Go ahead,
Kim. Oh, yeah, they can go to stablecamper.com and they'll be able to pull up everything on there. There's a gallery. There's pictures of the stable camper system and everything. It has, you can order through the website too.
Mm-hmm. And you'll stop somewhere along the way and drop it off at a UPS store.
Yes, we will. And if they want to get a hold of us, they can also email us too at stablecamper@gmail.com.
That's okay. And that's on the website.
Yeah, and that's on the website too.
And then also you can follow us on social media. So we do Facebook and then we do Instagram as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we launch new stuff. We launch it up there as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, great.
The other thing I would say is, I mean, we're truck camper people first. So we're all around the country on social media. We're around and we were up in BC and one of the local people up up in Vancouver, BC, got all those. We stopped by and had tea and coffee with them. It was great.
Yeah.
And if you're ever in Oregon, come out, come see the shop, come see us. We've
had quite a few people come to the shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, that is really the fun part of this type of business is that everybody just connects.
And it's a social business. Everyone's having fun, and that's what we're out to do, too.
Yeah. Well, that's the object of the game, isn't it? Yeah. Is to get out there and have some fun and relax and enjoy. And sometimes by yourself, but sometimes with friends.
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
I'm so excited that you guys are here to join us and that you made the time to stop and talk to us and tell us a few of your interesting stories. And I didn't get any big secrets, but I don't know. So, one's a technical computer person and one's an engineering nerd. And nerd was your endearing term, not mine. So, thanks again. It was really fun. Yeah. And I'm headed to your camper after this, so be ready.
All right.
Yeah, I'm gonna come by and look at stuff.
We're all heading to your camper. How many people fit in an Eagle Cap 1165? You want to find out.
We'll make it the clown car of the rally.
Candace had 9 in the 992, so we can beat that.
Yeah.
We'll see. We can absolutely beat that. All right. Well, thanks so much, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
Well, that was awesome. Getting a chance to hear from Candace and Jared Sund. They are really cool, and their story's cool. Their products are cool, and they're going to keep on releasing new stuff. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I was so impressed how well it worked because, I thought, this might be kind of fun. It's amazing, folks. I was so, so blown away by how it stabilized the campers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so looking forward, if you want to find out more about what we're doing here with the podcast, go to rvsmalltalk.com and you can check out our show notes. We also have a place on Facebook, so check us out there, RV Small Talk on Facebook. You can listen to us on all these different places like Stitcher and Podbean and Google Play Music and so many more. So please check us out. We don't mind if you like or follow or subscribe.
We don't mind at all.
Not at all. It helps us out. We get to learn. We get to grow. Send us messages, comments, questions.
So next week, I get to go to U-Camp and I'm going to camp with all of those new camp people.
So they're going to have the trailer people and the truck camper people, you think?
I would assume everybody's there. I know that the campground actually filled up in a matter of days. So I know everybody wants to be there and is going to have so much fun. I love seeing all the different kinds of trailers and all the things they've done to them. So I'll try to get some pictures and I'll try to do some interviews with people who've done some really interesting traveling. Right.
And you're going to fill up on honest to goodness Amish home cooking.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. And you know, I might even get to talk to some of the folks at New Camp, and I'll get to see the new Avias. They'll be out at the end of this month. So I will see the new line being built and see how far they've come on the barefoot.
Okay, well, I guess we'll have to stay tuned and see what you come up with.
That's right. That'll be all in next week.
So until next time, check us out at rvsmalltalk.com. We'll see you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.